Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren, and we are recording from Sweden, Scandinavia. You can listen to a new program every Thursday and Sunday through our website, redicecreations.com. We have a frequently updated news section, a growing radio archive with a subscriber section up there for you. Today we have Kent Bentkowski back with us on the program, and Kent is of course behind kentroversypapers.net, where his excellent collections of essays can be found. And today we're going to talk about the microchip agenda. This is always a hot topic and an important one to discuss also. Who is behind it? What's the reason for it? And how close are we to some kind of mandatory shipping, and how is this being implemented in popular culture and being manifested, as it were, into our culture and getting us acclimatized to this? This is a very important issue for many, many reasons. So there's much to talk about, and I think we should bring on Kent right away. And let me also say that we're fortunate to have Kent with us today, and I mean that in two ways, because Kent had, I guess, a somewhat close encounter with the other side just about a month ago. Isn't that right, Kent?
Yes, that's correct, Henrik. Let me say that it's a pleasure and an honor to be back on Red Ice. I greatly enjoy our conversations. And what happened in August is I had a very severe attack of hepatitis. I happened to be hepatitis A, B, and C positive, and this is because of my having hemophilia and my receiving blood products during my lifetime. So what happened is I started to collect this waste fluid in my body, where it actually saw me gain 50 pounds of this water weight. This caused problems in my abdomen and caused problems with my heart and my lungs. So what happened is I ended up in the hospital for a week, and the very first people I saw when I went into the hospital were these two women from hospice who come into my room, and they tell me that my doctor had sent them and that he was concerned that I might die over that weekend.
Sheesh, really.
And did I want to make arrangements? Did I want to talk to them about things like my will, my healthcare proxy, and so forth?
Sheesh.
And I knew that this wasn't going to happen, so I excused these women, and I said, no, thank you, I'm not interested. I feel like I'm not going to need your service, thankfully. So during this week that I was in the hospital, at one point, they withdrew this fluid out of my abdomen, and it ended up being 10 liters
of fluid
that they took out.
My God. Wow.
Which was just bottle after bottle after bottle of this waste fluid that I saw. And this was quite alarming.
Yeah.
This also caused problems with swelling in my legs. And I only recently, within the last week to 10 days, started to get back on my feet. Thankfully, I'm feeling much better. My doctors and my nurses are very pleased with the progress that I've made in a very short period of time. They expected my recovery to take months and months, possibly over the entire winter. And I am just about through with that convalescence period.
Yeah. Wow, sheesh, what a story. And very short time. It was like, as you said, did it just, you know, happen overnight? Well, I mean, how fast did you, when you ended up on hospital, I mean, did you notice that things were wrong or were just developing during a long time? What happened?
Well, this actually happened over the course of about 2 weeks.
Okay.
Where this went from sort of a problem to a really bad problem.
Yeah.
What happened was, on the night that I was taken to the hospital by ambulance, I was supposed to be visiting with my son on that day. I called his grandmother, who watches him until my ex-wife can get out of work. She works from 12 noon until 8 p.m., and Grandma watches my son for us during that time until she can get out of work.
Yeah.
So I called her and I canceled the visit. She immediately calls my ex-wife on her cell phone and leaves a message that says the following: "You better get over there and you better check on Kent because he sounds like death warmed over."
Hmm.
So when she got out of work that night, she comes over to the house here. We no longer live together. And she takes one look at me, and she happens to be a registered nurse, by the way. And she says, "You are going to the hospital tonight.
Hmm.
You look horrible. You look like you're very, very sick. And get your stuff ready. I'm calling the ambulance."
Mm.
And that's how that went from bad to worse in that 2 week time.
Sheesh. Okay. So we're, as I said, we're fortunate to have you here, and we need you, and you're doing great work. So I mean, it's great to have you here. It's upwards and onwards from here, and I mean, I guess there's new energy and new projects in the work. I guess that you even have, you know, considering what has happened here, and now that you're looking forward to new projects. I understand that you even have an announcement to make here about a forthcoming writing project, right?
Yes, that's correct. What I wanted to do today is I wanted to announce on Red Ice exclusively that I am in the process of putting together my very first book, which will be talking about the American mass media, and this is expected to be published in 2008 sometime when it's finished, and it will be self-published under the name of Kentroversy Multimedia Group.
Excellent. That sounds very, very, very nice indeed. I'm looking forward to very much, you know, reading and getting into your stuff. I mean, again, you write excellent essays. I can't wait for this to be out. Do you know if it's going to be, is it a long way off, or is it nearly completion? Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. First, I'll start by saying that this is sort of by popular demand. Over the past year, I have received literally hundreds and hundreds of emails from my readers and now my listeners of my podcast who have basically said to me, "So, dude, when's your book coming out?"
Yeah.
And I kind of wrote them all back and at the time, and I said, "What book? Do you know something I don't?" And I kind of, at that point, started thinking about this, and it occurred to me that if I was getting these many amounts of questions about this, that there was a demand that was building up and an interest that was building up. And so what I've done so far is put together the outline for the book, where I will be talking about specifically American mass media, film, television, and popular music. And I have some of the manuscript done. I would say it's probably about 20% finished at this point.
Mm. Excellent.
So I'm in the beginning phase of getting this underway.
Excellent. You know, I can't wait. Gonna be so great to see it when it's done. So let's definitely. That's something we need to return to and do a radio show about that when it's time for that to be out. So again, can't wait. Excellent. So let's get to our main topic for today's show. As I mentioned in the intro, we're gonna spend some time talking about the microchip agenda. And Kent has an essay on his website, kentroversypapers.net, called The Microchip Agenda. And the subtitle is, Would You Like a Ship to Go With That Hot Dog? And I guess that the entry point, Kent, that you had into this thesis or this looking upon this with the microchip is the fact that what we see now and what is becoming more and more common right now is that our pets and animals and domestic animals are the ones that are being tracked, shipped, and traced, as it were. But I guess that you also noticed, and a lot of people that are into this and looking at this now, that this is moving into the human area now, meaning that we are going to be the ones who are tracked and traced, and we're going to be the domestic animals, as it were. Is this the entry point, Kent, that you had into this subject, looking at it, you know, noticing that animals are and our pets are being shipped, and that, you know, now we potentially could see this going into humans also?
Yeah, what happened, Henrik, is on July 31st, 2005, my cherished dog of 9 years passed away. My dog Bear, and he was well loved by everyone who knew him. It was a devastating loss to me because in a number of ways he was a very, very close friend to me, as close as one can be to a pet, you know. So what happened after that was, after a period of mourning, I went to the local Society for the Prevention of the SPCA, and we went to pick up a replacement dog. And they gave us this brochure when we adopted this new dog.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in this brochure, it talked about this idea of, if you really care about your new pet, the best thing you can do for that animal is to microchip the pet.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, what it said is this, and I'll quote right from the brochure itself. It says, quote, if you are worried about loss or theft, you need more than just a name tag to identify your dog. Stop at your veterinarian on the way home from picking up your puppy and set your mind at ease with permanent identification like a microchip.
Hmm.
You can also take this opportunity to obtain a general health review and set future appointments for immunizations, which we will discuss later. If microchip service is available in your area, your puppy will be assigned an exclusive registration number and entered into a national registry. If he or she turns up at any shelter or vet, a quick scan will reveal the registry information and you will be called. While this sounded on one level like a good thing,
mm-hmm.
on another level, it's quite nefarious, because we get into this issue of this gradualism, which I identify 6 steps from farm animals all the way to humans,
mm-hmm.
and we are a good partial. We're a good way down that road at this point.
Definitely. Do you think that these steps that you talk about is a kind of acclimatization or even conditioning to this idea, starting off with our pets, meaning that we, you know, these are the ones we love. This is something that we do for the people we love. So the step from your pet, for example, to your child isn't that, far, basically.
Yes, that's very true. In fact, the step number one was farm animals and livestock. Now, I grew up on a farm here in the Buffalo Niagara Falls area, and so I'm well aware of the idea of tagging farm animals. Typically, how this was done was either through a brand of the sigil of the farm or the logo of the farm,
mm-hmm.
which was actually burned into the animal's flesh and is quite painful to the animal.
Oh, yeah.
And destroys the skin. The fur never grows back in this area. So they went from there. And what they did is they started putting these metal tags, which had these ID numbers on them, and they would clip them to the animal's ears. Now, you see these mutilations of these cattle that are supposed to be related to these UFO sightings and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I vigorously disagree with this.
Really?
I think that what's really going on when we see those mutilations is that this is part of this agenda, giving them the pretext to provide this microchipping from the brand to the metal tag to now the actual insertion of the microchip into the cow.
Hmm, really? That's a very interesting perspective, actually. Hmm.
That's how it strikes me as
a
person who grew up on a farm.
Yeah, I haven't even thought about that. So it's another potentially here another scam, as it were. You know, everyone's looking at aliens again, but there might be a totally different agenda behind this one, I guess.
Yes.
So, right up front, what you're talking about here again then is, okay, to get acclimatized to this idea, microchipping our pets, our domestic animals, then moving into humans and all of this. And again, behind all of this is the idea that this is made because you care about your pet or the person or your child or whatever. So right up front, I mean, let's dive into it. Why is this dangerous at all? I mean, on the surface, it's like, this is great. What's wrong with it?
Well, see, here's the thing. They only talk about half of the story here. They talk about all the great and wonderful things that can be done that are beneficial to the individual. For example, the child is protected. A person who has Alzheimer's, for example, has all their medical information on their chip. And they talk about this, but they never mention the fact that these chips can both transmit and receive information. So not only can they extract these medical data and this information about how your pet is registered in this national registry,
mm-hmm.
or how your child can be protected from kidnapping, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They don't talk about the fact that they can alter an individual's state of consciousness by using these microchips. And that's just one example of something that's, in my mind, quite harmful about these.
Definitely, most definitely, and that's absolutely right. The body as a bioelectrical entity basically can be affected by signals or transmitting, and this is in the end something that might be able to on some levels communicate with your internal, as it is, electrical field, basically. And who knows how far again this technology is. What has been going around in when thinking about this is why they even want to use what I call the big ships, because I guess the main company that we can focus on here is Verisip or Verisip Corporation,
right.
And they have these very, what I think at least, very large ships. They're humongous if you think about it. I've been pondering upon why they don't move into some kind of even nano-sized receiver or transmitter. The technology might not be out there yet, or at least in the public arena, as it were. But it almost feels like there's something else going on. And what I strongly reacted to was, and I guess that you've heard about this, Kent, was that just a few weeks ago, it was announced that Verisip, that their implants actually cause cancer or tumors, such as that, around the ship itself. Did you see this news, Kent?
Yes, absolutely. And that's because of this continuous, pervasive electronic field that's generated through the use of this on a continuous basis in our bodies. They don't want to talk about these things because, number one, it makes them look bad in terms of a public relations respect, and they don't want to talk about this because, quite frankly, they want to sell billions of these chips.
Of course. And
they literally want every man, woman, and child on the planet be microchipped.
That's right. And I guess that so far, at least what I've heard, the Verisip has been kind of struck them pretty hard, I guess. And this was out in many mainstream news sources. I guess that what is her name? I forget that now. She's behind the website spyships.com. They released this news story, and this was released to AP and MSNBC and a lot of other places also. So I guess what we could see here because of this news is that there actually now comes some other company that pops up that offers smaller or some other technology, meaning that we might actually go into some other totally new technology, nano-sized or something that you almost you can breathe it in, or you can you don't have to inject it, because in some way that's kind of a barbaric way to do it, basically, isn't that right?
Yes, exactly. The woman that's behind spychips.com, Dr. Catherine Albrecht.
Yeah, that's right.
She's going to be my guest on the Controversy Tapes podcast in 2 weeks.
Oh, great. Perfect.
So we're going to talk about this issue from her perspective as a frontline activist. So I'm very, very interested to get her perspective on this.
Yep.
Her book is tremendous. It's got a lot of excellent information, and her organization is perhaps the leading activist group that's fighting this agenda, and I fully support everything they're doing in this regard.
Yeah.
I do want to comment on one thing that you mentioned just a moment ago, is one of the reasons why these chips are kind of on the large size, as you had just mentioned, is because of the antenna for the broadcasting. For some reason, they have not gotten that down in size. I understand that some of these chips, whether or not they're still in development, I do not know personally, are like the size of a grain of sand. I've heard about that.
That's right. And That's an interesting point you mentioned about the antenna, because that means that the antenna is an external thing. Well, it's implanted into you again, of course, but it's an external thing. But what I would guess that the next logical step for them is to actually use the body itself as the antenna, meaning that as soon as the ship can interact with your, I mean, either with your proteins or with your cells in some way, or become more incorporated into your body, more a part of your body, the microchip might utilize the electrical current or the ability for the body to send and receive messages, basically. We'll see what happens. I don't know where this is going, but I bet you that they're working on a number of different technologies to be able to solve this issue. Don't you think that's right?
Oh, sure. Yes, I agree wholly with what you're saying. In fact, it's entirely likely that they already have this on the drawing table, or maybe even in actual development as we speak. The issue, once again, is, you know, conditioning the public to accept this, and they need to do that first before they start getting into these larger issues here, because, you know, people are going to mass protest against them, as we already are at this point.
Yeah.
And I see that, you know, furthering and getting more intense, the protesting, because a number of people that I've spoken to about this have basically said, no effing way, I'm not allowing them to do this.
That's right. Exactly. This seems to be it. This is actually where people draw the line. I mean, as soon as they want to go into your body, that's a big no-no right there. How do you think that they're going to manage to, you know, convince us that we must have this ship? Are there methods out there? Are there think tanks, you know, working on this now to get this popularized? What is the strategy here, do you think?
Well, what they're doing, a couple of different things here. The first thing that they're doing is they are making this a fashion statement. For example, there's a nightclub in Barcelona, Spain, that has a VIP club. And the membership card for that VIP club is actually a microchip implant. So they're going to turn it into a sexy fashion statement, so to speak. And when they do that, they will most likely get more people to agree to it than would otherwise if there were some sort of a mandate. Now, in terms of a mandate, this can be also be used in conjunction with a false flag terror attack, where it can be used to justify the implanting of microchips for our safety, of course, and for the safety of our children. And notice, they always pull the children out, and they always bring the children out, and they always say, you know, you have to protect your kids. And they do this because everybody loves their children, and they want the best for them.
That's right.
So it's the perfect card for them to play.
Exactly, because that's on an emotional level. That doesn't speak to your rational side. So to bypass your rationality, they have to speak to you in an emotional way. And you're exactly right. That's the way they do it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, one thing they could do also, I guess, is to, for those who might not even have kids, or for teenagers or whatever, they might haul out some celebrities on the red carpet with a, you know, with a chip in their arm, or some kind of procedure where they talk about this, and many people after that might be able to, you know, go after this and scream, you know, scream to have it. They're going to demand it, basically. I would suggest that this is the way they're going to do it. This is, as you say, this is something that's going to be connected with another event, meaning that they're going to have all the technology in place for and ready for when the people themselves actually demand it and when they scream for it, right?
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine the type of interest that it would create if someone like Michael Jordan accepted a microchip implant?
Hmm.
Or somebody like the pop star of the month, you know, accepted one of these. The masses and the mass sheeple would flock to this Verichip company and literally, as you just said, beg for these things to be implanted just because their hero has them.
That's right, absolutely right. You know, one more thing here that seems to be a theme when talking about the microchip is the religious aspect to it, or the even the Christian aspect to it. The mark of the beast, of course, is a connection that comes up again and again when we you know, research the microchip, but. Verichip, interestingly enough, have a subsidiary corporation, I guess, or something like that, called the Verichip Health Care. And what is interesting about that is that they actually very recently changed their name to Xmark Corporation. And it's, to me, it's almost like they want to send out this message. I mean, Verichip Corporation are working with another corporation called Digital Angel Corporation. I mean, what the heck is going on here, Kent? Is this something that they want to portray, this kind of image? Or they want to speak to people in that way? Any ideas?
You know, it does appear so, because they could call it anything under the sun. You know, you don't have to use these type of trademarks to identify these products. And again, you know, like you said a moment ago, this speaks to the emotional side of the individual. And when you get into this religious aspect, and more particularly religious fervor, this is something that quite possibly could be done on purpose, just to speak to the emotional side of that part of the market, so to speak.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Again, to kind of, not maybe create a dichotomy, but again, getting these two sides fighting, and that the religious, you know, aspect of the population, or part of the population, can go very much against this, but on the other hand, you have a population that, a part of the population that accepts this on a for totally other reasons beyond the religious ones. But there is one interesting thing that you brought up in your article, and this is about Tex Mars' work on something called Project Lucid, and the name there reveals quite a lot. I guess that is an acronym, but do you want to speak about Project Lucid a little bit?
Yeah. Project Lucid is a book that Tex Mars had written, and this book is actually pretty disturbing to read, because what he talks about in this book are all the control issues in terms of this technology and how it can be used in most nefarious ways. You know, we're talking about using operant conditioning, for example, popularized by B.F. Skinner. The conditioning of the potential market. Then you get into these issues related to the control of the individual's thoughts, and all these ideas actually were discussed in this book. And Project Lucid is something that he sees as a description of this overall agenda, and it's this Beast 666 computer system, which is supposed to be this like international globalized registry of all of us, and within these code numbers that they assign to an individual, they can tell you where you come from, what your medical problems are, and all of this. And all of this information, of course, can be stored on these chips. Now, when they talk about these microchips, the companies that who make them, they talk about a very small part of the information that can be contained on the chips themselves. But they don't talk about things like, you know, you can put your whole life history on these chips. You can put your entire life's medical history on these chips. You can have things like your fingerprints, your footprints, information about just about anything related to your life can be put onto these chips. And this is something that, you know, they, for whatever reason, and I believe what that reason is that they, you know, don't want people to know the real depth of what these things are capable of.
That's right. I've heard that they use what they call like a signature number, or very similar to what people have when they connect to the internet, an IP number, meaning that the chip is going to have a unique number, and then they can scan the number, and they reference that number against a database. It can be a local database or a global, whatever that might be, and that the database itself actually contains all the information about you and all of this, so they could be, meaning that they don't have to, be, you know, in that regard, programming the ship in that sense and updating that ship, but because all they need basically is that signature number that identifies you or the ship in this case that is connected with you. And then they can, as you say, have a database that actually, you know, grows and grows and grows with information and everything they want to know about you. I don't know if this is what you mean, or do you think that they actually are going to have store information on the microchip themselves?
Well, some of that information will be local to the chip. When you start getting into things like purchasing preferences and information about habits and you know, what you do with your life, how you spend your money, and so forth, that information would be too much to put on a chip of that size. However, these databases can absolutely be scaled upwards or downwards in size, and this information about everything about your life, who you send email to, what you buy, what magazines you read, who your favorite authors are, what you do with your money when you go out to buy food at the grocery store. That's one of the things that Dr. Albrecht talks about, are these supermarket preferences, shopper club cards, where you can get a discount if you're registered with the, you know, local supermarket's shoppers club. And they have this at the supermarket I shop at.
Really? Mm-hmm.
For example, if I buy a gallon of milk with the card, it's like $3 for a gallon, U.S. If I don't have that card, that milk is like $4.50 a gallon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you mean. Mm.
So they manipulate people into buying into the idea that you need this, because otherwise you're just going to be spending more money and wasting money.
That's right.
Exactly. So there's a number of different ways that they manipulate and condition and get people used to the idea that this is part of their future.
Exactly.
You
and then
better accept it now.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have the other side to that, that they kind of flood the commercial market with you have endless amount of different cards everywhere. We have different codes for everything, and there's cash, and all of this again is going to be kind of like you want a solution to this in the end, meaning that you want to have everything on one place or in one card or in one single thing that you can remember with one code. But then you have the issue of the potential issue that this might be lost, you might drop it, you might even be stolen from you, something like this. So they have to make it secure, and the only way to make it really secure in that way is to actually implant it into you. So there are all these different small steps all the way here that kind of leading up to this, basically the microchip. You see it wherever you look, basically. And we shouldn't also forget that this could be integrated later with a different RFID technology that is out there, meaning that for example, if different products in the store can have RFID tags on them, meaning that I think it was Albrecht that talked about this actually, even that when you approach certain products, you can get they profile you, and they can even give you a price for the product that you want to shop right there, meaning for different profiles you have different price ranges, and there's all kinds of different integration with prices here, meaning that if you're a wanted customer you'll get benefits, but if you're unwanted through RFID technology, they can just bump up the price basically.
Yeah, in fact, to marketers this is probably a dream come true on one level. Because they can integrate all of these different schemes to market their products in very unique ways that they could never do before.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm of the belief that, we're over-marketed too now.
Yeah.
There's too much junk mail coming into my mailbox. There's too much junk email coming into my email box. There's too many commercials on TV.
Mm.
It used to be in the 60s, 1960s, they'd have an hour show on television, like Star Trek, for instance, the first Star Trek show. The amount of time that episode was about 50 to 52 minutes in length, with about 8 minutes of commercials during that hour. Today, a typical one-hour show on any network is typically 40 minutes with 20 minutes of commercials per hour.
Mm.
And this is easily verified by looking at DVDs of these episodes of these various TV shows from these two decades of the 1960s versus our current time of the 2000s.
Hmm.
20 minutes per hour of commercials. And they wonder why TiVo is so popular.
Mm, yeah.
So we can skip all that.
That's right, exactly. And a lot of shows or producer of shows and even companies of television shows now are getting up to speed with this, and they realize that people are avoiding the commercials. So in a lot of instances now, a lot of companies themselves actually are behind the development of a lot of these, you know, sitcoms or whatever it might be. So a brilliant documentary with Douglas Rushkoff. I think this was either it was The Merchants of Cool or the second one he did, The Persuaders, that got into this a little bit. And he was, you know, he was speaking to some of these companies. For instance, they did a I think it was this, in this show he brought up Douglas. They had a show on in Sex and the City, and they actually dedicated an entire show around a project product itself, meaning that product placement is not the main idea now, but actually to develop an entire, even to some instances, a series or entire episodes around a product, meaning that the whole thing that we watch in the end is about a commercial, you know. They want to push some commercial crap on you anyway, so it's incredible, you know.
In fact, if any listener is wondering what the hell TiVo has to do with microchip implants, let me tell you this. The TiVo Corporation was just awarded a patent for the use of microchip implants to interface with their next generation digital recorder.
What? Really?
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay. Sheesh. So the okay. Did I say why the reason for this might be remote control your TV box to record?
For purposes of remote control, mm-hmm. and also storage of viewer preferences and purchasing information.
Okay.
Such as pay-per-view purchases and so forth.
Mm. Yeah, that's the way to go, you know. They want the entertainment bad enough, you're going to... Yeah, they're going to ship you on the way. And then we have the other side, of course, also. We have the all the iris scan going in. I'm thinking again of the movie The Minority Report. That portray this pretty good, meaning that you can't walk through a mall or a supermarket without basically being, you know, bombarded with personalized, commercial, references, and I want to push something on you all the time. So this is going to be like a, well, it is already, I guess, but this is about the trying to resist this, because this is a noise level that is getting louder and louder and louder all the time. So we'll see how this develops. That's one side to all of this, of course. But then I guess I want to return a little bit more to kind of talk about the microchip and what your take is on the main idea why they want to have a microchip population to begin with. I mean, what is the reason for this? Why do they want it? And actually, who more? I mean, we have mentioned about some of these corporations that are behind it, but I guess that there are more nefarious people behind those corporations and pushing the agenda, as it were. Why do you think we need a microchip? Why they need a microchip population? And who is behind it?
Well, my personal belief on this is that they are looking to create a docile population who will do anything that they are told. This appears to be, at least to me anyway, one of their responses to the type of protestation that's going on now, to some of the other agendas that they're pushing. This global government and this command and control structure and the control grid that they're constructing with all these advanced technologies. So if they can get that population under their control, so to speak, they have a much easier time in terms of not having to put up with the potential of riots and mass demonstrations, and which we may be on the verge of at the moment. Here in America, they just announced this week I think it was on Monday, that the current approval rating for the government in Congress is now 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure this concerns those in power.
Hmm.
And so who's behind this is the power-hungry, power-grabbing elite that's behind everything else that's going wrong with this world at the moment.
That's right. So in the end, do you think that this is about quieting all kinds of dissent and homogenize the people, making it more... well, I go back to the idea of the Borg again. That's a great analogy, making people into... again, making this hive mind... everybody connected to this hive mind, rather. And the fact that when they actually have total control of the population in the end, they might not even have to have some kind of microchip in people. This might be just about the short period of time we have now, when people still have some kind of unique identity and individuality left. But as soon as, you know, they move into some other area, we could, I guess, tie this even together with some of the work that Nick Begich and other people have done, meaning that they're able to manipulate people even with basic frequencies now, meaning that potentially you don't even have to have a microchip in your arm, because this is something that can be externally put upon you, or they can achieve the same effect from an external thing. So I, in a way, I kind of go back to that again with the idea of that they actually want to have a place and microchip into your arm. It's more about doing so on a psychological level, meaning that you have to agree on it or upon it, and you have to be part of that. It's almost like it's a ritual thing. Would you agree on that, Kent?
Yes, absolutely. Once they get your consent, then, you know, a large part of their work is done at that point, because you're agreeing to what you're being asked to do. And this is a perfect example that you bring up with the Borg, because to create a homogenized groupthink, to use Orwell's term, that creates an environment which is very favorable to those in power. It eliminates, as you just said, dissent, and it creates a situation where they don't have to worry about all of these, you know, protests and disagreements with what's going on.
To me, it feels like those who are in power are tremendously afraid of us. This is something that happens again and again and again, it feels like, in history. As soon as governments become, you know, they get the foot into, you know, foot into the door, as it were, they get a small space where they can operate, they immediately go about trying to expand their own power and their power over the people. And all of this, in the end, doesn't show that we should be afraid of our governments, but rather the other way around, meaning that all of these people up there who are, you know, trying to force this upon us and trying to make us into docile animals, meaning that they're afraid of losing their power. They are afraid of us because we are actually their threat, because we, in the end, might be the one who actually comes to the idea that, hey, wait a minute, we actually don't need these bullies up there telling us what to do and don't do and all of this. And there might be, to some degree, there might be different philosophies up there, meaning that there even might be people that think that they actually do good. They want to protect the stability of a nation or the government itself. They want to ensure that the government will sustain in their manageable way of keeping order or whatever. But again, I go back to that idea, and I don't know if you agree or not, Kent, but to me at least, this shows that the governments are actually, to some level, afraid of their people. Do you think that that's right?
Yes, yes, I agree 100% with what you're saying here. Like, for example, I don't think that they fully understood how much impact the internet would have on society and how much of a tool it would be for true democracy and true freedom for us. I think that what we have been able to do with the internet, just in terms of the research community, you know, that people like you and I, honest journalists, have been able to publish good work and have many, many people agree with what we're doing is an audience that I could not have commanded 20 years ago, because I wouldn't have been able to connect with that audience in the same way I can today. So
that's right.
I think that's something that they're definitely afraid of, is the internet.
That's right, and we've, you know, again, we've talked about that before. That's one thing that they're looking to get their handles around and in some way control it or another thing. But as always, I think it's perfect that we that we round things up on this kind of positive note. I mean, I would say to everyone that the entire shipping business here is about the control of the human spirit and about the abolition of the individual and all of this, and that the technological side is to try to go about it in creating this kind of hive mind, hive mentality, or board-like people. So, I mean, in the end here, resist the ship, don't allow that into your body, even though that there might be external forces that can assimilate this effect and have you or manipulate you in a very similar way. I think a lot of this again can be resisted by the fact that you're strong in yourself and that the individual in the end will prevail. And again, I think that is a good way to round things up and a nice place to end things off on, Kent. Would you agree that you know, an advice would be to everyone to resist the ship no matter what happens, no matter whatever traumatic thing might happen, that, you know, resist the ship, basically. That's it here, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And they will threaten us, you know, with something pretty nasty if we don't. You know, they'll say things like, we'll cut off your ability to purchase things, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I can only guess at the types of things they might threaten us with. But the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, is resistance to this, because if enough of us say no, there is no possible way they will be successful.
That's right.
And that's just the bottom line.
That's
so if everybody says no, we win.
That's right, exactly. So basic education here is the only thing that you need. Read up on what the microchip does. Read that report. I'm going to link up that also in relation to this show, about the fact that tumors are created around these, at least the VeriChip RFID tags or microchips. And the fact that whatever happens, we don't need this for some kind of economic system going in, or even for the tracking or tracing of people. That's totally, totally rubbish. So resist that. But Kent, to round things up here for this time, again, tell people about your website so people can find your essays easy. I'm also, of course, going to link up your excellent article that you wrote about this. But tell us about your website.
Yeah, my website is controversypapers.net, And on that website, on the front page in the right-hand column, is a section called Controversy Special Reports. That is an excellent place in which to begin educating yourself on several issues that I believe are very important to our times. I also have a second website, which is called controversytapes.net. This is a website that is both a repository for my various media interviews that I give, as well as being the home base for the Controversy Tapes podcast. It's a 1 hour per week show that comes out every Monday, and it's also available on or at the iTunes Music Store.
Excellent. Controversypapers.net, that's the main website. And we're going to have very soon upcoming with Kent a subscriber interview on Thelema. Kent, I'm looking forward to that very much and speaking with you again.
Yes, thank you very much. And I greatly enjoyed talking to you today. And I can't wait to do it again next week.
Thank you so much, Kent.
Okay, have a good day.
We'll return and talk more with Kent next Thursday for our subscribers. We're going to get into the subjects of Thelema and magic. Very interesting material with Kent upcoming. Thank you for tuning in, and thanks to Fredrik behind the controls. Until next time, take good care. This is Henrik saying bye for now.
I ain't no normal. Don't need no ID around my neck. So, Mr. Politician, got born a name like blood runs red. 'Cause I ain't no number. Don't require no ID around my neck. So, Mr. Number Maker, ID cards don't stop no hijack jet. Chips.